Let's start this morning by turning to Luke chapter 2, verse 51 and 52. Luke chapter 2, 51. This is the story here of Jesus' childhood, which is brief, but what it says is very powerful. It says in Luke chapter 2, verse 51, that he, meaning Jesus, went down with them, meaning Joseph and Mary, came to Nazareth, and he continued in subjection to them, and his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature, in favor with God and men. I find this amazing, honestly. Here Jesus has humbled himself to become a human being. And if that weren't enough, he subjects himself as a child to other human beings. Despite their human imperfections, despite their susceptibility to error, and despite the misjudgments that they might have exercised in their well-intentioned endeavor as parents, Jesus submitted to them. I find that amazing that he has done this. But Jesus and his Father were willing to accept such losses, whatever losses those might have been, in order to uphold the law. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, it says there, honor your father and mother. And that is a commandment of God, and Jesus took that extremely seriously, that that was more important than trying to assert his authority or assert himself against his parents. Jesus rightly knew that the honor of his heavenly Father was impossible without the honor of his earthly parents. And we're going to consider Joseph as his earthly father, even though we know that he wasn't literally so. But he honored him as though he were. So think about that. How can a person honor God the Father if indeed he will not honor his own physical father and mother? So that's a lesson here for us today, and I'm talking to children here. If you have a parent who is still alive, then you're a child, okay? And even if your parents are not alive, well, then you can teach this same lesson to those whose parents are still alive. So children of all ages, whether they are young or older, in order to be pleasing to God, we are expected to submit to our parents in the right capacity there, and yes, always to honor them, even if our parents are unbelieving. I don't see that as being a characteristic here that is required. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3, and if you want to turn there, we will be there shortly, it repeats this fifth commandment from the Ten Commandments, because this is a moral constant. And what we mean by moral constant is it's a moral law that is constant in all laws of God. Whenever God makes a law with men, this would be one of those constants in that law that you would expect to find. Those who fear God, this is not an option for them. They will abide by this teaching. So the responsibility actually lies upon both parties, parents and children, because parents are supposed to teach and discipline their children as to how to honor them and why they are to honor them. They are to instruct, but they're also to reinforce that teaching. So there's a parent's responsibility, but then the child's responsibility, especially if you are living under your parent's roof, because now you are subject to the house rules, if you will, you are responsible to do the honoring. Otherwise, you are accountable to God. But this is not all about law and fear of judgment. Paul says it's a first command with a promise, and there's a blessing then involved in this, a blessing to the parents, first of all, in the fact that they are honored by their children, and then a blessing to the children who obey. And in an age today when disrespect has become accepted and fashionable and pretty much par for the course here, it is critical that all, parents and children alike, come to terms with this. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, it says, honor your father and your mother that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. And that, of course, implies that if you don't honor your father and mother, then there would be divine judgment awaiting you. In other words, God is very serious about this. If you think about it naturally, and I don't want to give the whole lesson away here, but if a person doesn't have respect for his parents whom he can see, how in the world can he respect God the Father whom he cannot see? It just stands to reason. And the fact that this has made it into the top 10 of the most important commandments that God gave to Israel ought to make us think very seriously about it as far as God's perspective. This is not to be taken lightly. It is not to be glossed over. It is not something that we say, well, that was then, but this is now. No, that's the way it is, period. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother," which is the first commandment with a promise, "so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth." We sometimes get soft toward the regard to this instruction because we don't see any kind of things happening to us when we violate them, you know? And this is kind of funny thing about human nature. If God were to strike people dead randomly, occasionally, we might have a whole lot more respect for him. But the fact is, you can sin against God, you can dishonor your parents, you can violate the rules and the commandments of God, the ground doesn't open up, lightning doesn't strike you from the sky, a plague of locusts doesn't come and, you know, destroy your property. Things like that don't happen. And so we might take from that that God used to be really serious about this, but it's not really that way now. No, now the judgment's just been deferred, is all. Because it's still there. It's just that you'll face it, not necessarily in this life, but most certainly in the life to come. Romans chapter 1, verse 30, for example, disobedience to parents is listed among the monstrous, deviant sins of the heathens. Paul has a long list of sins there, and disobedience to parents is in that list. That should tell you something, again, about the seriousness of that. And then you read there in that passage, that long passage from chapter 1, verse 18, down through the end of chapter 1 there of Romans, and you'll realize that God's judgment is against all such people. Similarly, in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, disobedience to parents is a characteristic of the secular, ungodly world of the last days, which, of course, we are in because we are under the gospel and this is the last day. So God's view of the matter is very plain. Just because the earth doesn't open up and swallow us doesn't mean that he's any more tolerant of dishonoring one's parents. But the purpose of the commandment is not to frighten or burden children of any age. Rather, it's for preservation of the family as well as the individual souls. So first of all, to discourage and eradicate deterioration of the family, this commandment is put into place. If you understand the family to be the fundamental core of any given society, then you realize how important it is to keep the family intact. And in order to keep the family intact, there has to be law and order. There has to be respect. There has to be someone in charge, and there has to be people who listen to and respect and obey the people who are in charge. And if you take all that away, then what you have is anarchy. I think we're seeing some of that down in Mexico right now, in our modern age, where there are at least parts of Mexico that are ruled, literally, by anarchy. And how is that working out for them? People are getting killed all the time. There is all kinds of violations of every level of against human decency and property and everything else. That is the world without honor. So it's extremely important then that the law of Moses taught children of a responsible age to honor their fathers and mothers. Those children who were supposed to be responsible, and of course I understand this to be older children, who did not respond to this law, they were to be executed. You can read that in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18 through 21. If a son is disobedient and rebellious to his parents, if he is a glutton and a useless son, the parents are to take him before the city elders, and there's going to be a fair investigation into the matter. But if the son is found to be the worthless son that his parents have said that he is, then he is executed. And that's not due to the vengeance of the parents, but rather to eradicate all sources of evil and rebellion from Israel. Because evil and sin are contagions. They are a threat to society. If we let them go, then they infect things. And of course, they infect people. So it is, by the way, in the law of Moses with prostitutes, witches, warlocks, mediums, idolaters. They are all forfeiting their right to live because of that which they have chosen to do. And if the family disintegrates, then eventually, negatively, this affects society, which is, of course, in Israel's case, God's possession, and God will not tolerate that. But it must be understood today, even among Christians, if Christian homes, remember we started our series talking about the importance of Christian homes, if Christian homes are disintegrating, then that negatively affects other Christian homes, and that negatively affects the church with which those Christian homes have affiliation. And that negatively affects the brotherhood, which is the physical church on earth. And you see where that goes. It's not in a vacuum. It's something that permeates everything it touches. And so, well, we don't have any permission to execute children today, and that's not the point. We must take very seriously this responsibility that we have to train our children how to honor and why they should honor, and yes, punish them when they do not honor. Because that's in their own best interest to do that. The second purpose of the commandment, as far as preservation is concerned, is to produce this healthy fear of God, this respect for God. Without this fear or respect, a child's soul is in danger. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 says, "Fear is the beginning of knowledge." And if a child does not learn how to fear God, well, then knowledge means nothing to him. That is, the knowledge of God will not sink in. He will not respect it because he doesn't fear the one from whom it comes. So it just makes sense here that we instill within our children in a healthy and responsible manner the idea here that God is a God to be honored. The father and mother represent a kind of God, if you will, or the first presentation of God to their young children. In a biological sense, they created their child. Now, technically, I understand that God is the one who gives life. He's a giver of life. Parents participate in a God-given reproductive process, but the children don't understand all this up front. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that their first impression of God in heaven is, in essence, if I can say it this way, kind of the God of the house, the ruler of the house, the law of the house. Parents symbolize God and the child's first encounter with authority. Think about that. That's their first encounter with authority. It's not out there in the traffic laws. It's not out there in society. It's not at school. The first contact with authority is with their parents. And they derive their authority from God. So a parent has a great responsibility to represent God in the household. They must not ignore this or abdicate that responsibility. And if the child refuses to honor and obey, then that is a form of rebellion, which we'll talk about in a few moments. This is very similar to governing authorities. In Romans chapter 13, verse 1 through 3, for example, I'm not going to take time to make this into a separate point, but you have to understand that the principle here is consistent. As we honor our parents because their authority is given to them by God, in that same way we also honor governing authorities because their authority is derived also from God. So it's not a different thing. It's not a unique thing necessarily, but it is in a unique context. And so it's just a respect for authority. We are, in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, we are told to honor the king. Well, parents, like legitimate governing authorities, ultimately derive their power and authority from God. Otherwise, we have no motive to honor anyone, if not for a fear of God. Back in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. You notice that this is interesting here, because when we're talking about husbands and wives, husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husbands. But this is different. Children, obey your parents. You say, well, they don't have to love or respect. No, it's just a different relationship. Okay? It's a different kind of relationship. And this is regardless if the parents are Christians or even if the parents are obedient to God. You, children, have an obligation to put yourself in submission and to willfully obey your parents, just as Christ did obey his parents. In the Lord, there means according to his will or according to his instruction. We want to focus just for a moment on this word honor, which means to respect or esteem or value highly, to hold in high regard, to give deference to defer to. In other words, it's pretty clear, I think, when we think about what honor is. We can see a couple passages in which this is illustrated outside of the child-parent relationship here. Jesus says in John 5:22, "For not even the Father judges anyone, but he has given all judgment to the Son, so that all will honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him." This is a critical passage because what it's saying is you cannot honor the Father unless, of course, you honor the Son. Now, I bring this to your mind because we have some pretty predominant religions in the world today who do not honor Jesus as the Son of God, but at least claim to honor God as their Father. And what Jesus says implicitly here, directly, very clearly, is that that is an impossible position to maintain. You cannot honor God apart from honoring the Son. And where we're going with this is very clear. You cannot honor the Father apart from honoring your parents. Here's another passage in John chapter 8, verse 49. Jesus says, "I do not have a demon," which they were accusing him of having, "but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me," which means then you dishonor your Father. If you take these two passages together. "If anyone serves me, he must follow me, and where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him." So there is a reciprocating honor there. If you honor God in this life, if that's what you choose to do, then God will exalt you at the proper time, as Peter says in another place, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6 and 7. So you think about this idea of honor here. It is consistent. It is uniform. It is something expected of everyone, not just those who are in favorable circumstances, as we'll talk about in a moment. But you cannot think that, well, I honor God at the expense of my parents, because that's exactly what Jesus talked to the Jews about there in Matthew chapter 15, verse 1 through 9. Again, not taking time to go into that passage, but I invite you to read that on your own, because I know that you're going to go over all these passages on your own, right? Okay. And Matthew chapter 15, verse 1 through 9, talks there about how the Jews were honoring their rabbinical traditions above and beyond the law of God. And whatever was going to be given to our parents, of course, we've given it to God. And Jesus says, by doing so, you invalidate the law, which says, honor your father and mother. So you're willing to disregard the law of God for the sake of your traditions. And that just doesn't work. Let's put this into a more relevant context here for us. For example, how are we to regard a Christian of any age who claims to be a full and devout citizen of God's kingdom in fellowship with God, and yet his attitude toward his parents is disrespectful? He is sassy, or she is sassy. He talks back. He ridicules, does not listen to them. How will you reconcile those two things? On one hand, we have someone that says, I honor God as my father. On the other hand, we have someone who says, but I dishonor my parents, and I don't see any problem with that incompatible situation. That person's got a twisted, distorted view of the gospel. What are you going to say then of their claim to honor God? Or, let's turn it around. Suppose you have a Christian father who is, for example, considered a candidate for an elder. Say a congregation is considering him. He has excellent administrative skills. He teaches classes. He is knowledgeable in the scriptures. It's just that he allows his children to rule his house, to walk all over him, and to dishonor him. What are you going to say about that? Are we going to overlook the dishonor and say, yeah, but he's got all these other excellent skills, and besides, we need an elder? Or are you going to look at that man and say, if he can't rule his own house and keep his own children in the right context that they're supposed to be, then how in the world are we going to put him in a position where he's going to look over all of our families? Which is really what you ought to say to that. The point I'm trying to make here is that you can't claim, once again, to be right with God and then at the same time violate the commandments of God. You can't do that. Not only does it not work logically, but God says explicitly that that will not happen. And if you think about it, the Pharisees, once again, claim to be right with God, and yet Jesus says, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus kind of lays it on the line. These Pharisees claim to have a righteousness with God. They claim to be right with the Father, but they're not right. And if you don't have a better righteousness than that, then you won't have a relationship with God either. It's pretty powerful. So to honor then, in context, based upon Jesus's and Paul's teachings here, and the examples that we have in Scripture, must mean at least these things. First of all, and these first two things are specific to why you're living under their roof. First of all, to respect the position, the authority, and the decisions of your parents as a child under their guardianship. It does not mean you have to like this. It does not mean you have to agree with their parents all the time. But you have to understand that open rebellion is sinful. As is said in 1 Samuel 15:23, rebellion is as the sin of divination. Insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry. And you can read in the old law what happened to those who practiced divination and idolatry and iniquity. They were destroyed. Well, rebellion of any sort is no different. And if it's in the home, then it's threatening the fundamental basic core of society. And it's also, again, going against everything God has taught us to do. Secondly, to obey your parents as a child under their roof, once again, whatever does not force you to violate the laws of God. You are to be obedient. In other words, not just say, hey, parents, I respect you. I'm just going to go out and disobey you, okay? Well, that's not respect. In other words, you have to take it to the next level. I respect your position. I respect your authority. And I, in an expression of that respect, I'm going to obey you. Now, after you've moved out, when you're no longer living at home, obviously the situation changes. That doesn't mean that you stop respecting your parents, that you no longer observe their authority or anything else. It just means that now you have your own house rules, if you will, and you have your own authority in your house. And so the situation does change here to some extent, at least. But after you've moved out, honoring your parents still means to provide for their welfare whatever is beyond their ability. We're not talking here about enabling your parents to be irresponsible. Like the parents say, well, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to work, and I just want you to, you know. Well, we shouldn't do that for our parents any more than we should do for any child who doesn't want to do those things. I'm talking about an adult child, of course. But the idea here is that you take care of your parents. And such is the case in Matthew 15 that Jesus deals with there, also found in Mark chapter 7, a parallel account there, where he actually gives a little bit more detail. The support of your parents who are in need ought to be a priority to you. That doesn't mean that you say, well, we were going to give to the church, we're going to give to the Lord in offerings, but we're going to take all that money now and put it toward putting mom and dad in a nice retirement home. I don't think that's what Jesus had in mind, first of all. But on the other hand, if your parents are without food and they cannot even function with the basic essentials of life, and you're giving to God freely and letting your parents starve, you have a problem. I think that's more in line with the context of what Jesus is talking about. And especially if your parents, one of them, of course, is a widow, then Jesus, as he had demonstrated with his own mother, says and teaches, take care of that parent. And so it is in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And let's turn there for a moment because that has some important things in principle here, as well as the literal context. 1 Timothy chapter 5, look at verse 3 and 4. He says, honor widows who are widows indeed. That word honor there in the context actually means give financial support to. If you look at the context of what this is talking about, it's talking about a congregation that has a widow who meets the qualifications that are expressed in this passage, and that congregation is expected to help her out financially. But, verse 4 says, if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. So what that also says is, the church's first and foremost priority is not to just start dealing out money to a widow, who indeed has family that could take care of her instead and is supposed to take care of her instead. That is acceptable in the sight of God for that to happen in that case. That is, for the family to step up to the plate and take care of this widow. And then you go down to verse 8 and it says, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I hope you take these passages to heart and what they say. This basically says, especially in this context, that if you're unwilling to help your parents, or parent in this case, if you're unwilling to help, and then you claim to be a faithful believer, you've denied the faith. That's what it says. Read the passage. That's how important this is to God. Honor your father and mother. This is a serious warning. So to honor one's father and mother is not limited to childhood. I don't think he's talking about little children here, right? He's talking about grown children who have their own jobs and who are able to offer support and so on. But rather, as long as your parents are alive, you are to honor them. And at all times, whether you're young or old, whether you're still living at home or not still living at home, to refrain from maliciously ridiculing or speaking evil of your parents, gossiping, slandering, bad-mouthing of any kind. You can't honor someone at the same time you're bad-mouthing them and assassinating their character. You just can't. There's no consistency there. That's just not honor. And I think that goes perhaps without further explanation. We need to clarify at this point here that honor does not mean imitate your parents' bad habits, and especially their sins. If you back up in the Old Testament, for example, in Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 14 and following, if a son sees his father's sin and yet does not practice it, God says, I'll take care of that son. He will live. However, if he does practice his father's sins, then both of them will die. In other words, both of them will come under judgment. So there is a responsibility, and this principle, of course, is still in force. Any children who see their parents sinning and says, well, I'm supposed to honor my mom and dad, and they're sinning, so I'm supposed to do what they do. No, it's not what it's saying. Okay? Honor their position, honor their authority, but don't honor their sin. You can never honor God or your parents by sinning. However, you can and must still respect the position that they hold as your parents, even if you have strong opinions otherwise, just as we would with the president or law enforcement officers or even your own elders. You may not always like them. You may not always like what they do. You may not always agree with them, but you're still to honor them. I have to admit, I don't find a whole lot of favor with our president's leader of the free world. But at the same time, I do respect his position. He is still president. I don't have to like him. I don't have to like everything he stands for. But I am to honor his position. And so it is. You don't have to like your parents or what they stand for. You don't have to agree with them all the time. It doesn't always have to be a great relationship in the sense of everything we say just completely corresponds to everything, you know, the other says, and because that's just not even realistic, honestly. But honor must be there nonetheless. Respecting authority does not mean that we have to agree with it or even like it. Out of respect for God, we submit to it. And while we are under our parents' authority in their house, we abide by it. Just like when we are citizens of a certain government, we abide by its laws. That is required of all who are striving to hold God highly in their hearts. I do not abide by the laws of Spain, because I am not a citizen of Spain. I do not honor their laws. But I am a citizen of this country. And so I do honor the laws of this country. That's not only my moral obligation to God, that's my moral obligation as a citizen of this country. How can I be a patriot and violate the laws of this country? And you see the parallel there as well. My children do not have to obey the laws of your house because they don't live in your house. Now, if they're visiting, I would expect that, but you understand my point. But they are expected to honor our house law, if you will, our parental authority. And when they have children, I hope strongly that they teach their children to honor them as well. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18 through 20. Again, time's sake, I'll let you read that on your own, but Peter essentially says, and he's talking about slaves to masters, the principle is the same, even though the relationship is different. The principle is the same. He's saying, slaves, you are to, in essence, honor your master even when they are unreasonable. Or some of your versions might say, even when they're crooked. Because the Greek word for unreasonable there is scolios, from which we get the word scoliosis, which is the crookedness of the spine. So even when they're not straight, so to speak, even when they're not always just, and even when they're not always doing things the way they're supposed to, you are still supposed to honor them. That is, to honor their position. Once again, not their sin, but their position and their authority. And not just when they're all goody-goody, but even when they're not so goody-goody here, right? Even when they're unreasonable, even when they're unfair. Because you hear some children sometimes, and I'm talking here more about teenagers when I say this, that they think that, well, my parents, I don't think they're doing everything right, and I don't think they're always fair, and I don't think it's always the way it should be, and so therefore I feel justified in open rebellion. They won't say that, but, you know, that's really what they're promoting there. But there are absolutely no justification for that, not as a Christian anyway. Not as a believer. So you can't obey God only on the condition that everything is going to turn out well for you in every case, that the favorable outcome is going to be exactly the way you thought it was going to be. And of course, you're the one that always determines, right, what the favorable outcome is in those cases. You cannot say, well, I'm going to do this, but only if my parents are flawless, perfect, ideal people who always allow me to do whatever I want. Good luck with that. You're not living on this planet if you think that way, because your parents are not flawless people, for one, and neither are you. Rather, you should obey your parents because it's the right thing to do. That's what Ephesians 6:1 says, for this is right. He doesn't say, for this is going to always turn out smelling like roses, and there'll be butterflies and puppy dogs and, you know, gifts in your mailbox. It's saying, this is the right thing to do. And that's why it's pleasing to God, because it's the right thing to do, not because you're always going to feel good about it. This goes for both parents and children. Parents cannot teach and discipline their children to honor them only if they're guaranteed positive results. You are to teach them that regardless of how they turn out. And children cannot honor their parents only if it meets their expectations and their own self-measured reward. You are to honor your parents because it's right. This is the first commandment with a promise. The allusion here, of course, is to the Ten Commandments and the promise embedded in that. But the promise is still here for us. We may not recognize the full extent of this promise in this life, but we do recognize that the principle of it not only extends into this life, but especially into the life to come. Because God credits to the soul, if you will, if I can use it that way. God credits that person who honors his parents. Honoring your parents, of course, is no replacement for honoring God. You can't say, well, I'm a righteous person because I honor my parents. But rather, it is an expression of your honoring God. I honor my parents as an expression of my honor that I have, my respect for God. And those who sincerely honor God, of course, are going to also honor their parents, and they will be abundantly compensated for the whatever losses they incur for doing that. They will be compensated. Maybe this life, I don't know, but most certainly in the life to come, they will be compensated. Doesn't Jesus say something like that? Anyone who's left behind, the prophet of this world, if you will he not be compensated 100-fold? Joyful obedience to God ought to have a reward in itself, don't you think? Shouldn't there be some joy just in the simple fact that you are obeying God? And shouldn't that carry with itself some kind of fulfillment, some kind of satisfaction for the soul? Regardless of the thanks or regardless of the recognition of others, Parents, then, teach and enforce such honor. That's your responsibility. God is well pleased with that. And you should be well pleased with that, too, because it's the right thing to do. And children, show your honor and respect to your parents for these same reasons, because God is well pleased with that. And in so doing, you do honor God, and you represent Him well. It makes God happy, honestly. It just makes Him happy when children choose to honor their parents. So I ask you this morning, what is your intent? Is it to honor God? Is it to worship the Lord Jesus Christ? You cannot do this if you know the right thing to do but refuse to do it. You cannot do that. On the other hand, if you know what is right to do, well, then do it with all your heart. That finds great pleasure in God's sight. If there's anyone here that needs to respond to that invitation, if you need to do the right thing this morning, then why don't you do it as we stand and sing the song that's been selected for us.